everyone, good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Chris Caney in for Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright. We have a great show for you today. Let me get that out of the way. One cough, no more. Could it be? Should it be? Would it be?
I got $10,000 that says I'll take the over on that.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah, but look, I hope I'm wrong. I hope
so
I have to pay.
So much pressure on my lungs this morning.
I hope you didn't take the over on Syracuse last night.
Oh wow. That was early
no,
for that.
No, I had to take it there.
Congrats. Listen, Chris Canty's a proud UVA alum. Are you an alum if you didn't graduate? He went there. And
no, I actually did graduate.
Oh, okay, my bad.
I do have a degree.
Congrats to UVA. Congrats to the defending national champs. Got their year off right. Good job. That'll be our college basketball discussion on today's show.
Now let us move on to other things that will actually be discussed in full on today's show. And it started like this. Should it be? Would it be? Could it be Odell Beckham Jr. might actually be on the trade block? We will discuss. I'm going to cough. I'm just going to do it.
Plus, Patrick Mahomes might be back under center on Sunday. And in the NBA.
Here we go. Two of the best teams squared off last night, just not two of the best players. Not quite my proudest moment opening the show, but the show's open. Hey, we were hoping to see a matchup of Giannis and Kawhi, but with Kawhi sitting out due to load management, it was all Giannis, truly all Giannis. 38 points, 16 boards, 9 assists, 1 assist shy of a triple-double. Clippers lose by 5. One might think that Kawhi perhaps might have made up that 5-point difference. As for the load management controversy, the NBA released the following statement. Kawhi Leonard is not a healthy player under the league's resting policy and, as such, is listed as managing a knee injury in the LA Clippers injury report. The league office, in consultation with the NBA's director of sports medicine, is comfortable with the team medical staff's determination that Leonard is not sufficiently healthy to play in back-to-back games at this time. Now, Doc Rivers was asked about load management before the game. Here's what he had to say.
I'm a fan of basketball as well, you know, not just the coach. And so I feel for that, you know, I understand that. We obviously have to do what's right by our players. You know, we have to, it's our duty. And for a fan, it's really a tough one. And there's no correct answer that I'm gonna give you that will satisfy that person that you're talking about.
Nick, what do you think about what Doc had to say?
I understand what Doc's saying. And you are in a tough spot where if you have a player who is unable to play at full strength and you have championship aspirations, do you ask them to play if you feel they're compromised, especially at this point in the season? I get that. What Doc Rivers just told me and what the NBA told me with that statement is, Kawhi Leonard, on November 7th, this player is not at full strength. Kawhi Leonard, despite not suffering an injury last year, despite going through the NBA playoffs uninjured last year, came into this season somehow, some way, with an injury. That's what they're telling us. Now, is it a chronic injury? Is it that by injury, is it more of a condition and something that this is just the new normal for Kawhi Leonard? He played after playing almost no basketball 2 years ago. He played 3 out of 4 games last year, playing 60 out of 82 in the regular season. And now through 8 games this season, he has played 6 out of 8. That is 3 out of 4 games, 75% of the games. I suppose that is what we should just expect from Kawhi. Unfortunately for Kawhi, that removes him from the discussion of best basketball player alive. Bill Walton once upon a time had a claim he was actually the best basketball player alive. Guy couldn't stay healthy. Now, this is not to the Bill Walton level, obviously, but Kawhi Leonard's 28 years old. He's in year 9 and his team desperately needs him. It is as simple as that. The Clippers this year, when Kawhi has played, are 5-1. When he has not, they are 0-2. Paul George has real legitimate injury concerns. He had shoulder surgery on his left and his right shoulder last year or this offseason, so he's not available to them yet.
Soon.
And, well, we hope. We hope that he will be back soon, and we hope that when he comes back, he'll actually be able to play. But I tried to sound the alarm on this last week, and people thought I was trolling Kawhi Leonard when it was not even Halloween, and he was already load managing. We now know that the alarm I was sounding last week is a legitimate one. He is going to be doing this all season long. He will not play in back-to-backs. It would be shocking if he plays 70 games. What that means to others on how they rank him is up to them, I suppose. But it's bad for the Clippers, and obviously it's bad for the fans.
Well, I think it takes him out of the conversation for best player alive during the regular season. Now, that's going to change once we get to April and we're talking about NBA playoffs. And we saw there was no bigger star in the NBA last year in the playoffs than Kawhi Leonard. So the one thing that we don't know is whether or not the medical condition that he's dealing with, the degenerative knee, is something that is indeed a condition as opposed to Kawhi Leonard just needing rest. But the one thing I have to say about that is I have to defer to the player. If the player says that he's uncomfortable doing that and he's uncomfortable playing in back-to-back games, then I don't see how the Clippers or the NBA league office can force Kawhi Leonard to go out there and play. To me, that part of it just doesn't make any sense. Clearly, the Clippers are in a situation that they need him right now. They traded away a lot of their depth to bring back Paul George.
Yep.
No Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. No Danilo Gallinari. So it's going to be a different team if you don't have Kawhi and PG-13. You see it. With Kawhi out of the lineup, they have a -9 differential in terms of points in their losses. So I look at it in terms of this. Kawhi Leonard, we know what he's going to be once we get to the postseason. It's just a matter of the Clippers positioning themselves throughout the regular season to make sure that they're one of those top four teams in the West. Because I do think it's important in the tougher conference to make sure that you host the 100%. First round, you have home court advantage.
And I would just real quick follow up on that, Jenna. I would say it's important that you're one of the top three teams in the West because there's five outstanding teams out West. Two of them going to have to play each other in that first round. So if you have Lakers, Clippers, Jazz, Nuggets, Rockets, one of those teams is going home after the first round because it'll be the 4-5 matchup. So I would say while we usually, I agree with you, it's top four, top three this year seems extra important.
If there's anything I've learned from being on this set and talking basketball, it's all that matters in the NBA is the postseason and what you do in the postseason. If it was the Warriors and they wanted to take a couple games off across that 82, no problem as long as they get to the postseason. And I would argue that you said the team desperately needs them. I mean, they only lost by 5 points to one of the best teams in the East, if not the best team in the East, with probably the best player in the East. Could something be said for the fact that maybe they do have a deeper team and Paul George will be back soon and they will be able to manage this load management issue, if you will, by...
Yeah, what can be said is they'd have won last night if Kawhi would have played. They wouldn't right now be the 8 seed in the West if Kawhi would have played. And now, fine, this is who Kawhi Leonard is at 28 years old. That's a shame. It's unfortunate. Evidently, that it's 26 years old, he had to miss a whole season. At 27 years old, he could only play 60 games. At 28 years old, he's going to be on the same track. But the postseason point's an important one. And I just want to remind America that the idea that the with Kawhi Leonard healthy in the playoffs, you're just coast to a championship in round two. Last year, it took a buzzer beater in game 7 for Kawhi's team to advance. In round 3 of last year, they were down 2-0 and in double overtime of game 3 with their season on the line. And in the finals last year, with Kevin Durant having a torn Achilles, with DeMarcus Cousins re-injuring himself, with Klay Thompson popping his knee, it was a 1-point game with 8 seconds left with the ball in Steph Curry's hands in game 6 of the NBA Finals. Those are 3 pivot points, any of which could have ended with the Raptors and Kawhi not being champions. They are now putting all their chips to the table of no one can say a mumbling word if we become champions. The odds are against that working out for them this year. And for the fans, the regular season matters as well. It's why the TV packages are what they are. It's why the season tickets are what they
are. Well, sure, the odds are against them winning the championship, and I understand that this is an uphill climb for the Clippers because they're having to manage their two superstars with these injuries. But at the same time, the point that you made about the close games that were played in the Eastern Conference playoffs last year, I mean, that just speaks to why the Clippers want to manage Kawhi during the regular season, because they want him at his best when it matters the most. And for the individual player, I think that all of the guys that are in the conversation for best players alive right now recognize that they have to have longevity and they have to have jewelry in order to be considered one of the people that should be in the pantheon of basketball when their careers are over with. So I understand what Kawhi Leonard is doing. He's trying to set himself up to be in that conversation for one of the best to have ever done it. I get it. But in order to do that, he's got to be healthy. He's got to have enough gas in the tank. Once we get to the postseason, I don't have a problem with what Doc Rivers and the Clippers are doing right now with Kawhi.
Unfortunately, that's no solace for fans of this team and for basketball. They would obviously love to see.
Well, the Clippers fans will be upset right now. They won't be upset when they're talking about going to postseason
championships.
Games.
Hey, on to the NFL. All smiles at Chiefs practice yesterday, where Patrick Mahomes was a full participant.
Say it again, Jenna.
Patrick Mahomes was a full participant.
Yeah.
Ahead of Kansas City's matchup with the Tennessee Titans, the reigning MVP has been on the sidelines the last 2 weeks after dislocating his kneecap back in week 7. Chiefs went 1-1 with him out of the lineup. But despite yesterday's progress, head coach Andy Reid said KC will be cautious with their quarterback.
We're not going to put him out there unless he's safe to do it, you know. And so, but he's got to work. He's got to go through this work level and see, and keep increasing it and see how he does. That's where we're at.
Kenny, we talk about this thing that at this point in the season, players are very rarely 100% healthy when they take the field on Sundays. But should the Chiefs, in this particular instance, let Mahomes out there if he isn't 100%?
Well, if he isn't 100%, Andy Reid and the medical staff have to make sure that Pat Mahomes is healthy enough to protect himself when he goes out there on the football field. What I mean by that is this. When you're out there on the football field in a game setting, players are reading and reacting. And so Pat Mahomes instinctually might have certain movements that he's accustomed to, being able to break contain, get out on the edge, outside on the defense, and be able to buy time for his receivers to get separation downfield. But if that knee isn't completely healthy, then you run the risk of re-injuring it, having another dislocation of the kneecap, or worse, you could compensate and injure something else. So I think that there are some serious questions that Andy Reid and the Chiefs medical staff have to answer. I think the biggest of which is, how much healthier would he be if you sat him out on this week and allowed him to come back next week? So I think those are the things that are in the conversation when trying to determine whether or not Pat Mahomes should start against the Titans.
The day after he suffered this injury, we thought he might be out for the year. Best case scenario, he was going to be out 4 games. Then they have a bye. He was going to be out essentially 6 weeks. Then we found out that Patrick's knee is, for lack of a better term, double jointed. There was no ligament damage whatsoever. And we started speculating, wait, how early could he come back? On that Monday and on right here today, I circled the game at the Tennessee Titans that they would be playing this weekend. And he is going to play the game at the Tennessee Titans that they're playing this weekend, and he should. Jay Glazer reported this past Sunday morning that he had spoken with a doctor that with this specific injury, within 21 days, the chance of re-injury is 40%. Outside of those 21 days, it drops to 10 to 15%. This Sunday will be day 24. Patrick Mahomes will play. He should play. And by the way, you might see a better version of Patrick Mahomes than you saw even before the knee injury, because what was hampering before the knee injury was an ankle injury that he kept re-injuring, that kept getting stepped on or rolled up on. And now he has had 24 days since he last played, or he will have had 24 days to get back, to get the ankle healthy. Now, I'm squeamish in this regard. They haven't had their Pro Bowl left tackle Eric Fisher, former number one overall pick, throughout the majority of the season. He still is not practicing. He had the core muscle surgery that DeSean Jackson had recently. He had it very early in the season. So they're probably going to be without him. They might be without Dr. DuVernay-Tardif, pardon me, their right guard, who had missed this past week's game as well. So the offensive line is going to continue to be somewhat compromised. But Patrick Mahomes is going to play. Patrick Mahomes should play. And with the Chiefs getting healthier, not just on offense, but also on defense with Chris Jones, they become an incredibly dangerous team the moment the best player in the league steps back on the field.
Well, before we open it up to how good the Chiefs are going to be when he's back, are we going to see the Patrick Mahomes we saw before? Are you going to see less plays for him? Are you going to see make sure he stays in the pocket? Are we going to see a different game plan for Patrick Mahomes? If you're Andy Reid, how do you game plan that?
Well, if I'm Andy Reid, I want to see the Pat Mahomes that we all know and love, the guy that won the MVP last year. If there are any limitations and he can't go out there and play his game, then I'm not going to put him on the football field, because the extent that I can protect him is not putting him out there. But if they put him out there, then they've got to trust that the player is healthy and that he can be himself. So yeah, if you're Andy Reid, I'm not pulling the reins back. I'm not adjusting the play calling. Now, maybe I'm not going with a quarterback sneak, but, I mean, in terms of situations and what you want to do, how that Chiefs offense looks, you have to let Pat Mahomes go be Pat Mahomes. Now, this is the first game within a 3 to 6 week window that they first projected when the initial injury happened. So I guess you could feel good about them staying to the timeline that they set out. They didn't adjust it on the fly. The fact that Pat Mahomes has been on the practice field ever since that injury occurred, that leads me to believe that he's closer to being 100% than not.
Are the Chiefs the best team in the AFC when Patrick Mahomes gets back in that lineup?
Here's a stat that'll shock people. Football Outsiders, which I think is the best way to the DVOA stat. It's nerdy even by my standards, but it's a respected metric because it adjusts for opponent and all of that. The number 11 defense in the NFL this year belongs to the Kansas City Chiefs. The Kansas City Chiefs have had a gauntlet of a schedule up to this point. They have played the Ravens, the Colts, the Texans, the Vikings, the Packers, the Raiders, who are all of a sudden good. Their easiest game of the year was against Denver, a game where they saw their quarterback have his kneecap dislocated. Right. Detroit's one of their easier games. Jacksonville, that's all nine. Not a single walkover in there. Not an AFC East team, not one of these dregs of the NFC East, none of it. The Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes is going to play this weekend, and the next game the Kansas City Chiefs lose is going to be next season. They play seven games the rest of the year. One game is against what I would call a high-quality opponent at New England. I believe they can go to New England and win, and I still believe they're going to win the Super Bowl. I think that they dodged as big of a bullet as one can dodge. They found a way to go 1-1, and the way they beat the Vikings, snuffing out Dalvin Cook with Chris Jones, their all-pro D-tackle, back in the lineup, was an enormous shot in the arm for this team defensively. I do believe the Chiefs are the best team in the AFC, and I don't think they're going to lose again this season, regular season or postseason, once Patrick comes back, and Patrick is coming back Sunday.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I think the Chiefs are a more balanced team than the team that we saw last year that hosted the AFC Championship game. But the only question now is, are they going to be able to get one of those top two seeds going into the postseason? Because right now, New England is the leader in the clubhouse, followed by Baltimore, who just beat them at home. So I'd be interested to see how the rest of the season unfolds and whether or not the Chiefs are able to make up enough ground to be able to get one of those spots, because we all know it's better to be 1-4 trying to get to a championship as opposed to being 1-6 in your conference.
And that's why that win they had early in the year against Baltimore looms so large, because if they and Baltimore finished with the same record, they would have the tiebreaker. It's also why those two losses with Mahomes to the Texans and Colts potentially loom large. If either one of those teams reels off a bunch of wins in a row, they wouldn't have that tiebreaker. But the Chiefs are going to go 13-3. They're not going to lose again. They're going to win the Super Bowl, and I'm going to be the happiest man in America.
All his chips are in right now. Thursday night football, Chargers and Raiders. Tonight, 7:30 on Fox, in a matchup of AFC West rivals, Phillip Rivers and the Bolts coming off an upset win over the Packers. A big win. Derek Carr's terrific season is flying under the radar, though. 13 touchdowns, just 4 picks. And get this, Derek Carr's got the Raiders in playoff contention. Kenny, do you see a scenario whereby the Raiders are actually a playoff team?
Well, if the playoffs started today, the wild cards in the AFC are the Bills and the Colts. And keep in mind, the Raiders already got a win in the bank over the Colts. So, yeah, they're a half game back right now. So, yeah, it is a situation that they can stack some wins going on a little bit of a run. And, yeah, we can look up and see John Gruden's team in the postseason.
Somehow.
Now, I think that's more of a long shot. That's pie in the sky. But the fact is that this Raiders team has got it turned around, and they're getting contributions from a lot of their young players. Most notably has to be rookie running back Josh Jacobs. He has become the identity of that Oakland Raiders offense. He's in the top 10 in rushing. He has 740 yards and 6 touchdowns. It's been really impressive for him to be able to have that knack for being able to know the value of a 4-yard run, helping to keep the offense on schedule. I think that's one of the reasons why that Raiders offense has been able to keep Derek Carr upright. He's the second least sacked quarterback in the National Football League. I think they've given up 8 sacks on the season. And that's a big part of Josh Jacobs being able to keep that running game, keep that team on schedule.
Even though that line's a little beat up going into this game tonight.
The Raiders, this game's confusing because I looked at the, as I always do, the favorites going into it, and I said, wait, the the Chargers are a 2-point favorite. And I was like, I thought this game was in Oakland. I was like, well, it says it's a home game for the Raiders. Is this a weird, like, is this in Mexico City or something? No, this game's in Oakland. And the Chargers are the favorite? Derwin James, we just found out he's coming back, but not for 3 weeks. And I understand the Chargers finally got their kicking situation solved because they got Michael Badgley back. But the Raiders are better, to me, than the Chargers. The Raiders absolutely are going to factor into the playoff picture. We banged on John Gruden a lot, and a lot of it was self-inflicted, but he's got this team playing well. And what they have the next 3 weeks is, after they beat the Chargers tonight, they get Cincinnati and the Jets. The Raiders are going to be 7-4 with a prime matchup coming at Kansas City in week 13. Now, I obviously don't think they're going to win that game, but I think the Raiders will 100% factor into the playoff picture. What you have right now is Gruden was not sold on Carr. That to me was very clear by the moves he made. You trade away Khalil Mack, you trade away Amari Cooper because you don't think you can win right now, because you don't think you have a franchise quarterback, and you want to replenish the war chest of picks if you have to go get a franchise quarterback when you move to Vegas next season. And by the way, that Bears pick, it looks like it's going to be a top, maybe the 10th pick of the draft, top 10 pick. But Carr's played really well this year. You have gotten the most that you can out of Derek Carr, a lot because you might have the offensive rookie of the year in Josh Jacobs. The defense is playing far better than it did last season. So I have to give the Raiders credit. I mean, the Raiders also have not had the easiest of schedules, and they're right there in the hunt, in the thick of things. I think the AFC South is going to beat each other up. Mm-hmm. I think the Bills are going to make the playoffs, and then there's going to be the Steelers, the Colts, Texans, whoever doesn't win the AFC South, and the Raiders are going to be competing with each other. Chargers are saying, hey, if we win tonight, we're right back in it. I don't think they will. Yeah, the Raiders are a viable playoff team this season. Absolutely.
I think something to talk about the line, the Chargers are coming off a big win over the Packers that everybody watched. Melvin Gordon had his best game of the season so far since coming back. Mm-hmm. You almost feel like they're finally getting themselves together, and maybe that could factor into why they are favorites in this.
Maybe that could be a factor, but to Nick's point, the Raiders have been far more consistent, far more competitive than the Los Angeles Chargers. So that's why I would give them the edge. I mean, they showed up in Green Bay. Now, granted, things didn't go their way, but if Derek Carr doesn't fumble that ball at the pylon, maybe we're talking about a different ball game in terms of the complexion of it. So the Raiders have been right there in all of these games. They have, to me, been the more impressive of the two teams. Now it's just a matter of, okay, can our offensive line with Trent Brown and Rodney Hudson banged up do enough to protect us against that Chargers pass rush with Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa? And one of the things that I saw that was interesting that the Chargers did, they put Ingram and Bosa on the same side to try to give those guys one-on-one matchups. And you saw Melvin Ingram go to work as a defensive tackle. So they're going to have their work cut out for them in terms of trying to devise a scheme and a protection to keep Derek Carr clean. But, I mean, I trust John Gruden to be able to come up with that. A big part of that is going to be staying on schedule, and that means giving the ball to Josh Jacobs.
And the Chargers, I'm done being fooled by the Chargers.
I knew you were
the Chargers
say that.
Last year was the outlier year where they actually finally played up to their potential. The Chargers for the last decade, when they are finally, oh, it looks like they're putting it together, they lay an egg, and when it looks like you leave them for dead, they have a game where they dominate the Green Bay Packers. Like, it's weird saying it with a John Gruden coach team, but I trust the Raiders more than I trust the Chargers. And so, yeah, I think the Raiders will win tonight, and you know, the Cincinnati and the Jets are not viable competition. The Raiders are going to go into that Chiefs game 7-4 with the belief being, hey, could they take the lead in the AFC West. Like, no, I think the Raiders are going to be a problem the rest of the season.
And you're both sold on Derek Carr.
No. I'm not sold on Derek Carr. I'm sold on what John Gruden is doing with Derek Carr as his quarterback.
You are getting, as to use one of my favorite phrases, you are getting the most juice out of that berry as you possibly can, but I just don't know how good that berry actually is.
To the Browns now. It's hard to imagine back in August that a team with so much talent could implode the way they have. While adding insult to injury, speculation that Odell Beckham Jr. could be on the trade block. Bleacher Report spoke to anonymous team officials who said teams could come calling if they keep losing. Quote, the vultures will be circling if the Browns keep sucking. Nick, should the Browns actually consider trading OBJ this offseason?
I want to make this clear because I have a relationship with Odell. I've not talked to Odell about any of this. This is just my opinion exclusively. Man, I hope teams come calling. I want to see Odell play with a good quarterback.
You'd like to see him play.
I thought he was playing, going to get his first opportunity. Now, Eli, once upon a time, was a good quarterback.
Yes.
Once Odell got there, he was on the back end, and by year three for Odell, Eli was finished, and they just were continuing to trot him out there. Odell has never had a season where his quarterback was above league average in passer rating. Never. Despite the fact that when you target Odell, this year notwithstanding, because Baker's numbers are bad targeting anybody, Eli's passer rating was like 115 when targeting Odell, and in the 70s when targeting, even having Odell couldn't bring that up above league average. All the great wide receivers get at least a moment in their career with a great quarterback. You know, our friend Chris Carter, he talks about, when did he set the NFL record? When Warren Moon was his quarterback those 2 years. Fitzy has always been great. When was he at his best? When he had Kurt Warner briefly. Randy is an all-time great, but Randy in the very beginning when Randall Cunningham was an MVP caliber quarterback, and then the 07 season when he had Tom Brady. Like Julio's always had Matt Ryan, and we can pick apart Matt Ryan, but Matt Ryan at his best is excellent. Yep. AB had Big Ben. I mean, you are seeing this year, hell, Tyler Lockett have immense success. You know why? Because he's got a star. DeAndre Hopkins gets to play with Deshaun Watson after going through the Osweilers and the Whedons and the Gabberts throughout his career. I want to see Odell play with a good quarterback. And I do believe Baker can be a good quarterback again. But yeah, if you're the Browns, for your sake, you need offensive linemen. For Odell's sanity, I'd like to see him go to a team with a quality quarterback. So you can't say no, you can't do it, even though he is the best player on the team.
Well, the second half of 2018 had us all believing that the Browns were a lot closer to being a playoff contender.
Everyone but Jenna.
Sure.
Okay.
You're right, Jenna. But most people were thinking that they could be a playoff team or at least challenge for a playoff spot in 2019. That has not been the case. So to me, the wide receiver position is akin to the running back position in this regard. That is more of a finishing piece rather than a piece that you build around. And right now, you're not getting the utility that you would be looking for a guy that's going to take up $14.25 million on your cap in 2020. Now, I think the Browns have some flexibility. There's an opportunity there because Odell only has a 275 cap hit if they decide to move on from him this coming offseason. So if you're Freddie Kitchens, if you're John, well, Freddie Kitchens probably won't be there.
No.
But if you're John Dorsey, maybe that's a decision that you consider trading Odell, because the Browns, they need players, not just one player. And I think that Odell is one of the assets that can bring back a haul to jumpstart the rebuild process.
And as ineffective as the Browns have been, as awful as Baker has been, Odell's still on pace for about 1,200 yards. He is now, his touchdowns have
one
fallen
touchdown
off a cliff because they won't throw to him in the red zone. He's got four red zone targets this year, which is an absolute travesty.
He's got
of
one
play
touchdown
calling
in eight games.
Yeah, because
one.
And that one touchdown came on a drive where the play started in the other team's red zone, and he just took it 80 yards against the New York Jets. I mean, you're seeing it right there. They won't throw him the ball in the end zone. Instead, they're throwing it to Callaway and these and the tight ends, and it's just an absurdity. And so the Browns have systemic issues. And even the biggest Odell Beckham critic cannot blame him for them this year. The worst thing he's done this season is wear a watch or wear different shoes. He has not been part of the problem. But if they are not going to figure out how to, I joke with Chris Caney, mostly because I'm jealous of it, because Chris Caney owns a Bentley. Ain't no point in owning it if you can't drive.
Exactly.
And right now, the Browns have a Bentley that's just sitting in the garage and you're occasionally taking it out for a Sunday stroll. Like, that's not the best use of the resource.
And yet, for the last couple weeks, all we hear about from Baker and from Freddie Kitchens is, we're going out of our way. We got to force him the ball. We're going to have to try to find a way. We got a game plan for him to get. We got a scheme for him to get the ball. And yet, as soon as the game starts, Odell doesn't get the ball. If you're OBJ, would you want out of Cleveland?
Well, if I'm OBJ, I consider it, just because they're not using me the way that he thought he was going to be used when they traded for him. Keep in mind what the Browns gave up. They gave up a former number one round pick with Jabril Peppers. They gave up the 17th overall pick this past year and a third round pick. So, I mean, you're not trading all of those those assets away for a guy that you're not going to use. But based on the statistics from Odell this season, yeah, I mean, they're not throwing him the ball in situations where they should be trying to get it to him. Last week's game against the Denver Broncos, case in point, fourth down, he's got one-on-one coverage, and Odell is putting his hands up for Baker Mayfield to throw him the ball. I understand that sometimes the coverage might tell you to throw it to a certain player, but in that situation, gotta have it, game on the line, go to your best player.
And by the way,
Odell is your best player.
And if you're going to force the ball in double coverage to a guy, that's when you throw. You can, the only guy on the team you can force the ball in double coverage to is Odell. Instead, down five, you have Odell streaking down the sideline, not only for the first down, for the game-winning touchdown. He doesn't even look to him. So, for the record, I don't think they're going to trade him. I think what they are going to put all of this season, this debacle, at the feet of Freddie Kitchens and just say it was all on him. Baker's going to be fine. John Dorsey's going to wipe his hands of it. Because Dorsey, by the way, is we give John Dorsey a ton of credit, helped build it in Green Bay, helped build it in Kansas City. Dorsey traded away Zeitler. Dorsey's the one that prioritized Odell over upgrading the offensive line. Dorsey's the one that hired Freddie Kitchens instead of hiring a coach who you had more certainty about. They're going to blame this on Kitchens. They're going to run this same team back next year, and we'll see how much better they are. But Baker's got to be better, and the best way for Baker to be better is to get the ball to the best player on your team.
Back here, first things first, look who's here. Yahoo senior writer Vincent Goodwill. Hey, Vince, thanks
What's
for joining
up,
us this morning.
How you doing, brother?
Got some fun What's basketball up? To talk about with you. We'll start with last night's action. Last night, Sixers in Utah to face the Jazz, and that guy, Joel Embiid, back from suspension after his fight with Karl-Anthony Towns, dominant in his return, two of his 27 right there, including 16 of 18 from the line. 16 boards as well. Bad news for the Sixers, though. Ben Simmons suffered a sprained AC joint in his right shoulder. He'll be reevaluated later today. Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz, unstoppable, 106-104. Vincent, what do you think? What do the Sixers need to do if they want to get over the hump this season and be that team out of the East?
I take umbrage with you saying Joel Embiid was suspended for fighting, because that wasn't a fight.
What was that?
That was like a pillow fight.
That was a pillow fight?
I don't know what that was.
Well, I wouldn't want to fight with you then.
No. I'm from Detroit, where basketball players used to really fight back in the day.
Gotcha. I knew where that was going.
But I don't know if they have the right personnel to be able to make a legitimate finals run, not from a defensive standpoint, because I think right now they're sixth in efficiency. They have length across the board. Al Horford, Joel Embiid, nobody's going to be able to score on them.
And at sixth in efficiency, you almost feel like they're underachieving a bit defensively.
Absolutely.
This should be a top three defense, and it will be.
I think it will be.
Yep.
But when it comes down to playoff basketball, you have to be able to have a guy that can create his own offense outside of the structure of the offense. Last year, they had Jimmy Butler to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And had Kawhi Leonard not made that incredible shot from the baseline, who knows what would have happened on the rest of that, in the rest of that game and the rest of that run. But Jimmy Butler isn't there anymore, and who knows what you're going to get out of a guy like Tobias Harris, who can create his own shot, but do you trust him late in games? Do you trust Joel Embiid to run your offense through him late in games? Ben Simmons, we know, can't shoot, won't shoot, and that has not improved. So where are they going to find offense? I'm not sure, unless they make personnel changes, but they've committed $500 million in the personnel that they have this past offseason.
It is a totally fair concern, and it's not going to be Ben. Like the AC joint injury, regardless, and I hate to be at this place with him, but he refuses to evolve his game. Mm. No matter how many videos we see of the fact that he doesn't have that ugly of a shot. Like, it's the hell, Giannis's shot is ugly. Like, his three-point shot, there's a hitch to it. It takes forever to get going, but he will shoot it. And even though he can't be shooting 18% as he was going into last night's game, but he will at least attempt it, so you can't just stay off 10, 15 feet from him. Ben won't shoot it outside of, forget 18 feet, outside of 8 feet. And so that has been the issue with them, the question with them. And we had Tobias Harris on this show after he got the huge contract. And I can't remember if it was on the air or off the air, but I asked him, I said, hey, into games, the exact situation you're talking about, that's gotta be you, right? And he said, absolutely. Can he do it? Tobias Harris is an awesome player that a bunch of teams have said we don't need. Like Tobias Harris on the Magic, was on the Clippers, on the Sixers. I like Tobias as a player, but when he gets paid the way he got paid, mm-hmm. when he slides into that spot that in place of Jimmy Butler, it has to be him. Because it can't be one of your big men. Can't be Horford or Embiid. It's obviously not going to be Josh Richardson. If it is, then you're in bad shape. Like and the guys they got, they don't have that much depth because they have allocated so much resources to the front court. I like the rookie they got, Thibault.
Yeah.
But he's a one-way player. He's a spectacular defensive player, even as a rookie, but he's got no offense whatsoever. So the only guy he can be is Tobias Harris. And if there's only one option, and the whole league knows it, and it's an option that's probably not really what he's best suited for, it is a legitimate concern. I still think they're the second best team in the East. I believe in them more than I believe in Boston. I know some people are higher on Boston than I am this year. Boston's a nice story. They're not as good as Philly. But how do you get through Milwaukee if you don't have that guy? I don't know if you can.
And I think last night's game proves Vince's point, because you're talking about a four-point game until Donovan Mitchell takes over, and he's the catalyst for that team going on that 12-2 run in the second half, which really created that separation. So, yeah, the Sixers are going to have to find somebody that can get them a bucket in clutch time. I don't think he can be Joel Embiid. You haven't seen historically a lot of big men in NBA history be that guy in that critical moment late in the game to take that shot. It's not Ben Simmons. He's shown us that he's not going to be that guy. So you're banking on Tobias Harris. I don't know if he's got that element to his game. They're going to have to find that part of it. They're going to have to get somebody to give them that identity late in games that can take over, that can get them a bucket, especially once we're talking about postseason basketball, because, you know, the intensity ratchets up. Mm-hmm. The defense is a lot better. So who's going to be that guy for the Sixers? We just don't know. I think that defense is going to give them a chance. Mm-hmm. Defense will keep the games close, but you're going to have somebody that can create their own offense without Brett Brown drawing something up on the sideline.
Well, I don't even know if Brett Brown's capable of drawing something up from the sideline. I'm not saying that he's not a good enough coach, but when you get to where the margins are thin, is he going to be that much of an advantage over Mike Budenholzer, over an Eric Spoelstra in Miami, over a Brad Stevens? Like, the East is a little bit different this year at the top than it was last year, where we know Miami has a guy in Jimmy Butler in a 7-game series who's going to go out and get his own. Boston has a few guys that, let's say Jason Tatum has taken his next step. Let's say Gordon Hayward is fully recovered. Let's say Kemba Walker is Kemba Walker. You have three guys. Now, Joel Embiid is supposed to be that guy. If he's the franchise, and he's supposed to be this 30-point MVP candidate, which I believe he is, he doesn't have a defined or refined, like, post-game. Two moves in the counter. He doesn't have that. You can't run an offense out of your big when he's so mechanical, and you can easily get to help, take the ball away from him, or at least force him into doing things that he doesn't want to do. And clearly nobody else is equipped to be that secondary primary
option. Right, listen, when Embiid's on the court, they're outscoring opponents by 17 points per 100 possessions. He's been sensational, which is one of the reasons why, by the way, we all laughed about it. Call it a fight, call it not. You can't be getting suspended, Joel Embiid. You can't get into that, because three games since the suspension, they won the first one barely, thanks to Korkmaz hitting that three at the buzzer. They lost the next one, and then with his first game back, even though he had 27-16. Yeah, but he was 5 of 16 from the field. He was making his money at the free throw line. They needed Joel Embiid not knocking some rust off last night. Maybe they win that game. What Embiid needs to do is pay the $50,000 or whatever Akeem's charging these days to go down to Houston for a long weekend and work on some post work, work on some back to the basket work. But I don't know who that guy is for Philly, and it doesn't have to be a great player. What you're talking about is they need a Lou Williams.
Yep.
They need Jamal Crawford, maybe not at this age, but a guy like that, that even if he is not your one or two option, a guy that can just break people down. What they need is the guy Donovan Mitchell's turning into, and they don't have, that is the gaping hole in their roster, and it's going to, I agree with you, I think they're going to win 57 games. I think they're going to be in the Eastern Conference Finals.
I don't know if they want to get there. You can't name a team in the past millennium, in this millennium of either side, that's gotten to the finals without a guy that can get his own shot. In the Eastern Conference, we may make fun of it and everything else, but these other teams are better equipped, even if they aren't better teams, better rosters up and down. But when you're talking about playoff basketball, you can get one guy that can steal you a game. Mm-hmm. That's the difference in you winning 4-2 and losing, you know, 4-3.
Back here hear first things first with former Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott. Bart, thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Thanks for inviting me, man.
That, my friend, is a great-looking suit.
Oh, man.
Good to see you, brother.
I come here, I get confidence for the day. What up, big fella?
Bart, we going to put something on Jets-Giants this weekend?
Oh, yeah. Ooh. See,
put
all right.
Put something on that?
That's because I almost took his Bentley 1 year.
No, oh. I remember one, once upon a time in 2011, Bart Scott dubbed it the death match. What ended up happening in that game, Bart?
Cromartie missed a tackle.
Oh, okay. All right, okay. Who won the Super Bowl that year?
Okay. Congratulations,
okay.
Chris.
All right, okay.
It's all right,
okay.
Man.
Wow.
Words hurt, Chris. Right. I mean, what can you say when you throw that one out there?
Let's talk a team that's not the Jets or the Giants. Let's talk some Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes, all smiles at all Chiefs practice yesterday, as Mahomes was a full participant ahead of Kansas City's matchup with the Tennessee Titans. The reigning MVP has been on the sidelines the last 2 weeks after dislocating his kneecap back in week 7. Chiefs went 1-1 without him in the lineup, but despite yesterday's progress, Andy Reid said KC will be cautious with their quarterback.
We're not going to put him out there unless he's safe to do it, you know. And so, but he's got to work. He's got to go through this work level and see, and keep increasing it and see how he does. You know, that's where we're at.
Bart, 100% healthy is hard to come by, mm-hmm. by football standards,
yeah.
when you're midway through the season heading into the second half. Should the Chiefs let Mahomes play if he isn't 100%? Not just with the knees, also have that nagging ankle injury that's been bothering him.
Right. As soon as you think you're ready as an athlete, you need one more week. And you have to protect a young quarterback from himself. You know, Andy Reid did a tremendous job in getting Matt Moore from his high school, you know, team that he was coaching and have him come in because he's always been a professional. You know, and you know that this week they have the Titans. You know, you lean on that run game like you did last week. Matt Moore last week, 25 for 35, efficient, 275. But then, you know, Tyreek Hill stepped up and was able to stretch the football field. Sammy Watkins came through with 63. And you have to understand that you have to see the greater picture. You have to explain to him the greater picture. To Mahomes. We don't want you to come back like Saquon did and struggle for two games because you know that it's almost Charger season. Charger season is two games away, and then you have your bye. Chargers are always a trending team in the second half. They're starting to figure it out. You want to make sure that you win your division, make sure that you can host maybe one game. But it's one of those things, like when the Yankees came down to the end, you know, do you want to go into the playoffs healthy, or do you want to go in making sure that you can try and get the best record? You know that New England's going to get that and is going to have to run through Gillette Stadium. You just got to say, you know what, it is what it is, but we're prepared this year to go in and compete a little better.
Well, you got to weigh what's going to happen in the short term versus the long term, but they also, as an organization, have to take a big picture view because Pat Mahomes is going to be the starting quarterback for the Chiefs for the next decade and a half. So you don't want anything to happen that could potentially jeopardize that. I think the medical staff has to ask themselves, are we doing the best that we can in terms of mitigating the risk of re-injuring the dislocated knee or for him going out there and hurting something else because he's compensating? So I think all of those have to be considerations before they come to a determination on whether or not they're going to have him play. But the fact that the Chiefs do have Andy Reid as their head coach, the fact that Andy Reid in 11 seasons has won games with multiple quarterbacks, I think that's something that bodes well for the Chiefs because if Pat Mahomes does need more time, the Chiefs have shown that they can go out there and be competitive and win games against quality football teams. I think the Minnesota Vikings are a lot better than the Tennessee Titans. Now, you can't overlook any opponent, but I just have to think with a player of Pat Mahomes' caliber, you'd rather be safe than sorry.
Pat Mahomes is going to play this weekend. He's a full participant on Wednesday. It'll be 24 days from the injury. Yeah. There was thought he maybe could have played last week, and that was the extra week to my eyes.
Yeah.
The extra week was last week after you had lost to the Packers that he was practicing all week last week, and they still held him out. This is now 3 weeks from the injury, plus it happened on a Thursday, so a little bit extra time. He's going to play. You mentioned that you maybe can get one home game. The Chiefs are going to be favored in every game the rest of the way except for at New England. They are going to have to win at New England at some point this year, either in the regular season, which all of a sudden could put the one seed back in play because that would be New England's second loss. Kansas City only has three and you have the tiebreaker. Or if you lose in the regular season, you definitely are going to have to go to New England in the playoffs. So at some point, you're going to have to win in Gillette. I think the Chiefs right now are in an incredibly advantageous position because they have, when the 2 weeks Patrick was out, they got the running game going a bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They were in that game against Green Bay. Up until a late fumble in the fourth quarter, it looked like the Chiefs potentially were going to pull off an upset in that game. And if Andy Reid had been a little more aggressive, down seven, instead of punting the ball away with in near midfield with 6 minutes left, going for it on fourth and three, they maybe do tie that game up. Against the Vikings, that was one of the best Chiefs wins in a number of years. Right. Not only because Matt Moore was the quarterback, but because Dalvin Cook had one of his least productive high usage rates in his brief but brilliant NFL career. The Chiefs also, you got to keep in mind, they lost their left tackle early in the year. He's not back, but he'll be back soon. Mahomes, before the knee injury, suffered an ankle injury in week one. Tyreek Hill suffered an injury in week one, knocked him out for 5 weeks. Chris Jones, their best defensive player, even if Frank Clark's the highest paid and Honey Badger's the biggest name, he was out for a month. He came back last week. I think the Chiefs are in a really good position. I think he's going to play this week, and it's hard to find a loss on their schedule moving forward. People will circle the New England game. I think they can go to New England and win. And so I think he plays. I don't think the one seed is out of the question. I think a bye is likely. And I think the Chiefs regain the position they were in my eyes, at the beginning of the year, as the best team in the AFC.
Here's the one thing I will slightly disagree with you on. You said last week was the extra week of rest for Pat Mahomes because in since the injury, he hasn't really missed any practice time.
Yep.
He's been out there on the practice field. This is the first game where Pat Mahomes will be in that window of their initial diagnosis. They said when he dislocated the kneecap,
totally
3 to 6 weeks, this is the first game within that window. So to Bart's point, saying that you want to give him the extra time,
right.
I think this is something that Andy Reid has to consider. You look at the competition that they have, the Titans, the Chargers. I get it, AFC opponents, one in your division, but you also have that bye week
exactly.
in a couple of weeks. So, I mean, and then the fact is they play that Chargers game in Mexico City.
Right.
We know what happened in Mexico City last year. They had to cancel the game because of the bad turf. So, I mean, that's one of those things that you have to consider. Do you want your quarterback out there on a hobbled knee in that type of situation and then going up against that type of pass rush? I know I'm forecasting a little bit.
No, that's a fair point.
But you can look at all of the opportunities that Andy Reid can give Pat Mahomes in terms of being able to rest and be as close to 100% as he possibly can.
But the thing that makes Patrick Mahomes so good is the thing you worry about when you put him out there.
Right.
So if you put Patrick Mahomes out there, you can't say, but just be careful, like try not to scramble too much.
Instincts kick in.
Yeah, of course your instincts are going to kick in. That's what we love about him. That's what makes him so good. If you're Andy Reid, do you put him in, but at 75% and say, hey, you got to see if you can try to control yourself and stay in that pocket?
I don't think you put him in harm's way. We saw this earlier with Saquon. Remember they were saying he was a mutant, he was talking about Wakanda, he wouldn't have got the vibranium and all that stuff, and then when he got in the game, he was hobbled. It was one thing to feel good physically. It's another thing to be prepared to be able to carry another man's weight, a 300-pounder's weight, somebody else falling on that ankle or falling on that knee. You talk about compensation, and when things aren't properly healed, you hurt other things. So yeah, he was fortunate enough that he didn't have any ligament damage with the knee dislocation, but it allows also the ankle to heal up as well.
Yes.
And that's a big thing that you worry about because you want him mobile and he's a guy that will get out of the pocket. If you can steal 3 weeks of rest and he'll be chomping at the bit and you want him to come back and you may want him to have to wear a knee brace or something like that to be able to go forward.
I think he will wear a knee brace. Here's one thing Andy Reid can do and I imagine he will do. You can call plays that make it less likely he's going to have to hold on to the ball for a super long period of time. I don't think you're going to see as many deep shots down the field because I think you're going to see more three-step or five-step quick read and release throws.
We'll hit you anyway. We'll take the L.
But sure. Then you make your offense easier to defend.
Absolutely right.
Speaking of bad jobs, moving on to the sophomore slump that Baker Mayfield finds himself in, and perhaps that's being a little too kind. After an incredible rookie season, Baker can't seem to get out of his own way, both on the field and with the press. Baker ranks last in the entire NFL in completion percentage, and probably close to that in patience with the media. But is Freddie Kitchens concerned with his poor numbers? Take a listen.
There's a lot of factors that go into that, you know. I don't think he's just wildly missing passes, so I don't know. I don't really look at that. I just want him to get better today, just like I want him to get better this week, more than last week. I truly do not look at stats.
How could you be a head coach in the NFL and you truly do not look at stats, Nick? Explain it to me.
No, you can't. Listen, I believe you, Freddie. I absolutely believe you.
I believe he does.
That you truly have information presented to you and say, I do not want it. That someone says, hey, here's data and here's facts that could make give you a better chance of doing your job better.
I'm good.
You say, nah, man, I'm going to go with the gut. Now, all stats are not created equal and all stats are not indicative of a player's true performance. We know that. Our friend Troy Aikman, a couple nights ago, said on Thursday Night Football, he does not like at all the yards per attempt stat. I happen to think it's a very valuable and important number. So, like, intelligent people, I think Troy and I are both intelligent, can disagree on certain things.
Sure.
But when all the numbers paint a singular picture, the numbers are typically correct. Sometimes there's noise, sometimes there's signal, and the signal on Baker Mayfield is he has stunk this year. 32 teams in the NFL, right, Canty? Mm-hmm. He's 33rd in completion percentage amongst quarterbacks, amongst 33 qualifying quarterbacks, because the Titans have had two qualify, Mariota and Tannehill. He's 32nd in passer rating. He's first in something, to his credit, but that's interceptions. Baker's been awful, and it's not, oh, well, but the drops and this, and well, if you look at it here, and while the rating's this, the QBR's that. No, Baker has been terrible. There is not a saving grace statistic you can say, well, but how about in these circumstances? And it's indefensible in this regard. He doesn't have a good offensive line. It is not the worst offensive line in football. Mm-hmm. He might have the worst coaching situation in football, but we have seen players overcome it. Baker overcame it last year when you had your head coach and offensive coordinator both dismissed on the same day. So Freddie's
saying, but he did better with all that mess and chaos and having two coaches or three coaches in interim. He actually played better.
Played better. The team was better. And Baker
has
regressed.
What were the expectations going into that second half of that season? I think once they fired Hugh Jackson, things changed. The pressure was lifted. And you're talking about them playing against inferior competition. They only had one win against a team that made the playoffs last year that happened to be their division opponent,
Baltimore.
The Baltimore Ravens.
And so, they beat that same team this year.
Yeah, so I think we have to be careful here in evaluating Baker Mayfield, but also Freddie Kitchens, because this was a guy that started the 2018 season as a running backs coach. They elevated him to offensive coordinator, and things went well in the second half of that year, which is why he got the head coaching job this offseason. John Dorsey didn't want to cut bait with him because he wanted to have continuity on the offensive side of the ball.
And because of his relationship with Baker Mayfield.
I think that's a really big part of it, not just his
offensive mind, but how Baker trusted him. And Baker, you credit probably a lot of what
that's
Baker
what
did last
mean
year.
By continuity.
That's what I mean by continuity.
Okay.
And John Dorsey went out on a limb and drafted Baker Mayfield because there weren't a lot of people that thought that Baker was the consensus number one quarterback coming out of the draft that he had. But because he broke the rookie touchdown record with passing TDs at 27, he said, you know what, maybe we got something here. Maybe this thing can work. But they had to make Freddie Kitchens the head coach. And when you do that, you're putting somebody in a position that you don't know that they can necessarily handle it. Freddie Kitchens hasn't shown us that he's capable of managing an entire football team. He showed us he was capable of managing an offense. But when you look at the expectations for this Browns team coming into this season, obviously you would want a coach that would be able to get that team to execute at a higher level, to be more disciplined. Right now they're struggling in both departments, and you have to look at the head coach as the problem.
And no one has been able to explain to me why the Browns did not do the seemingly obvious thing, which is elevate Freddie Kitchens from interim offensive coordinator to full-time offensive coordinator. The closest I've heard is, well, someone else was going to give him a head coaching job. Who? Who are these teams that were like, oh my God, maybe he has the greatest agent in the world. And I understand Zach Taylor got a job and nobody was talking about him, but at least he had the Sean McVay glow on him that seemed to be so important this offseason. And by the way, Zach Taylor, even though the team stinks, I'm not saying he's a bad coach. We don't know yet with him.
No.
I feel like we know with Freddie Kitchens at this point. But here are some numbers that aren't Baker Mayfield numbers. The Cleveland Browns this year, they're 25th in points. They're 29th on third down. They're 25th in the red zone. They're 28th in turnovers, meaning when you want to be first in that regard. So another way to put it is they're fifth most turnovers in football. It's been an abject failure across the board. And the idea of rejecting information because it doesn't suit then your preconceived narrative, that now that is a blight on the nation as a whole right now at this point. But you would hope in sports you could be a little more analytical and take information as a way to help you do your job better.
Exactly. They keep stats for a reason. It's a tool to help players and coaches alike and see what they need to improve on. And clearly there are a lot of areas for improvement. But by Freddie Kitchens saying that, what he's telling us is this. He wasn't ready to be a head coach in the National Football League. And now when you're talking about him rejecting that information, if you're a player in that locker room, not Baker Mayfield, think about how that makes you feel. Your head coach doesn't want the information. You're a team that's trying to get things turned around. If your head coach doesn't look at the information, how can he find answers in terms of how to fix this thing? He can't.
I just feel so badly for my friends in Cleveland. They have the only thing that's happened to them in 30 years of sports that's positive is LeBron James being born close to the city. And he came to Cleveland and then he left twice. And they thought Baker was going to fill that void. Ken Carmen, who's a great radio host in there, he damn near cried on the air Monday because they thought finally they had something that was going to be different. And once again, the rug is pulled out underneath them. And it just, for a fan base that loves their football team, it just sucks that the expectations were, I think, fairly this high, and they're somehow coming below the coming so far beneath it. It's just unbelievable.
The NFC is stacked. According to our friends at Fox Bet, the Saints are the favorites to win the conference, followed by the 49ers, the Packers, the Cowboys, and the Philadelphia Eagles. All right, Kenny, who is the best team in the NFC?
I'm going with the New Orleans Saints. In order to be a true contender, you got to be able to win football games a lot of different ways. The Saints have shown us they can win by kicking 4 field goals as they did against the Dallas Cowboys. They also showed us that they can go out there and score 36 points against a top 10 defense in yards and points, that being the Chicago Bears. So I really like what this Saints team has done. And they've had to overcome some adversity early on in the season, losing their quarterback Drew Brees for 6 weeks with the thumb injury. So the fact that Teddy Bridgewater stepped in and was able to hold down the fort until Drew Brees got back, I think that forced that Saints team to try to figure out different ways in order to win football games. They accomplished that task. That's only going to make them better as the season goes on.
Listen, the Saints are an extraordinary team. And by the way, on these odds, I don't think Seattle's the best team, but Seattle being 12-1 to win the NFC, Seattle being behind Dallas and Philadelphia, to me is outrageous. Like, once again, Russell Wilson and what he's doing gets underrated somehow. Seattle's, to me, should be a clear number 4, if not number 3, but number 4 probably behind. You mentioned the Saints, the Packers, and the Niners. And I don't want to discount the Niners, top 3 offense, top 3 defense, but I'm going to discount the Niners because I don't believe in them and their ability to beat the best teams in football come the postseason. The Saints are great. I think the Packers are better. Now, I get the argument that prove it to me, and it is tough to prove it to you because of the arguments you made, and that we saw the Saints do it with their backup quarterback for, at this point, 3 quarters of the season. The Packers had the most impressive resume of any team in football until last week,
right.
And it felt to me like they exhaled in that Charger game.
And Aaron Rodgers said that, too. We might have gotten a little ahead of ourselves.
Well, and he didn't like the way they got there, the travel out west, and after going to Kansas City, winning that game on national television the way they did, it felt like the Charger game was a bit of a letdown. And I am willing, because of what the credibility they earned over the first 2 months, to call that an outlier game. To say, okay, listen, they will throw that game out, even though hurts their ability to get the bye, as you always talk about, hurts their ability to be the one seed. But I feel like the Packers were just finally starting to hit their stride. And that team is the scariest team in the NFL. A team that doesn't have to have its offense be great to beat you, but its offense can be as great as any offense in football. The difference between the Chiefs and Packers, if we think those are the two most talented quarterbacks in the league, in Mahomes and Rodgers, is the Chiefs don't have a hell of a lot of paths to victory against great teams without Patrick Mahomes being the best player in the league.
Agreed.
The Packers have shown you, especially early in the year before Rodgers really got going, that they can beat the Bears. They can beat the Vikings. They can beat really good teams without Aaron Rodgers playing great. And when he does play great, well, then all of a sudden you're up 31-3 on the Dallas Cowboys in a game the Cowboys feel like they've got to have. So I think the Packers are the best team in football, or the best team in the NFC, pardon me. And I'm not going to argue with you too hard, because the Saints to me would be the 1A to the Packers 1, but I think the Packers are the best.
Well, here's the thing. I think the Packers will be the best as
by the
this
end
thing
of the year.
Goes on, as they get more familiar with what Matt LaFleur wants to do in terms of his overall philosophy and his scheme. But I don't think they're there right now. There's too much inconsistency with the running game, and then their defense hasn't shown the ability to consistently stop the run. And to me, that's where football is won and lost once we get into December and January. The teams that are strong in the trenches. That's why I can't discount the San Francisco 49ers, even though I don't trust their quarterback. Nick, you mentioned top five offense, top five defense. The fact that that offense isn't whole yet,
yep.
The fact that they're going to get Joe Staley, Mike McGlinchey, and Kyle Juszczyk back at some point, I think that's only going to help Jimmy Garoppolo, who to this point in the season is the only question mark for that 49ers team.
Would either of you be surprised if the Niners were ended up being the best team in the NFC?
Oh, I wouldn't be shocked if they ended with the best record. I'd be very surprised if they ended in the Super Bowl. And Niner fans and Richard Sherman can say, you know, you weren't on the bandwagon, don't jump on it, keep doubting us, no problem. The Niners are better than I thought they would be. I do not believe that team, even when they get those big people back, and it's a great point that they've been doing it without Joe Staley, and Juszczyk's a huge part of what
yes.
they do. Probably the best fullback in football. We don't usually talk about fullbacks, but he's excellent in his role in that Kyle Shanahan offense. I don't think they're ready to take that leap. I don't think they're ready to go from a team that's been in the dregs for a number of years to representing the NFC in the Super Bowl.
We'll find out on Monday night, because they got the Seattle Seahawks, a team that has beat them 9 out of the last 10 times.
But enough can't be said for what Kyle Shanahan has done with that team.
He's extraordinary. So
thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.